It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's no secret that Wisconsin is known for key agricultural industries like dairy, cranberries, and food processing.
But according to a new analysis, Wisconsin's agriculture sectors are vast and diverse, and there are big connections within the farming and food processing worlds.
The five-year analysis known as Contribution of Agriculture to the Wisconsin Economy digs into the revenue agriculture generates, the number of people it employs, and its environmental impact.
It comes out today. The authors join us now. Steve Deller is a UW Extension Community Economic Development Specialist and Professor in Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having us.
And Jeff Hadachek is an Assistant Professor and Extension Specialist in Agriculture and Applied Economics at UW-Madison. Jeff, welcome to the studio.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Steve, big report. People are going to be citing this thing for the next 5 years till the next one comes out. People picture agriculture, they picture maybe a dairy farm. This is a lot more than that. What all is encompassed in this report?
This is something that we do every 5 years to kind of give a kind of a check-in, if you will, to see what's happening to the ag economy in Wisconsin. And what we're seeing is that this particular go-around is that the actual volume of sales has actually gone up a little bit. So in that regard, the economic impact has gone up. But in terms of employment and income that's associated with employment, has actually ticked down a little bit.
And Jeff, food processing is part of this. It's not just on the farm, but that next step in our food chain. And that's a big deal. That's a big part of our agricultural economy in Wisconsin. Talk about that a little.
Yeah, so we take a pretty holistic picture of what we consider agriculture, and that includes everything from the raw production of the product on farm to all the way to the delivering it to the consumer. And yeah, on farm activity is about $30 billion of industrial revenue, and food processing is like $107 billion. So when we consider what is Wisconsin agriculture, a big chunk of that includes off-farm value-added production of food products.
And Steve, when you look at the overall numbers of people employed in agriculture and food processing, where are people working? I think the bulk of the labor is in that food processing sector, right?
That's correct. It is in food processing. When you think about dairy, for example, 95% of all the milk that's produced actually goes into value-added cheese production. The other thing is that when we think about agriculture, including food processing, a lot of that is actually located in our urban cities. So when we think about agriculture, it's not just a rural industry. It's woven into the fabric throughout the state's economy.
Jeff, what are the trends in that on-farm employment in particular? Take away that food processing in the city. There are people working on the physical farms. What are we seeing over time?
Yeah, it's certainly decreasing. And I think this is one of the things that maybe is a concern, and it hasn't been a trend for the last few decades, is that it requires fewer people to work on farm and to produce the same amount of food. So a lot of that we can attribute to technological production, right? So we have, on dairies, we have automatic milking systems that don't require as many individuals on the farm. So we see production really relatively stable, but on-farm employment is decreasing.
And Steve, we've talked again and again about the number of farms. I hear dairy in particular, I think, going down. I'm doing a motion on my chart to go down here. Production stable or going up. That implies, again, concentration of the industry. Is that something this new five-year report is reinforcing?
That's what we're seeing. We're seeing kind of the aging of the farmers. A lot of farmers are hitting retirement age. They're deciding to step out. The next generation does not want to take on the farm. So we see the number of farms declining, but the land that's in production, the number of animals that's in production has stayed the same and indeed is actually increasing a little bit.
Something that's interesting in the report is you guys do something called, I think, a cluster analysis. So when we think of an economic cluster, people might think about Silicon Valley, right, in California, all these tech businesses together, and that does something. The motor industry, the auto industry in Detroit in the 50s and 60s. What kind of clusters, Jeff, are we seeing in Wisconsin that might be opportunities for future growth?
Yeah, right. And so this analysis really sort of pairs together both that on-farm and off-farm contribution to agriculture. So it asks sort of what is Wisconsin's strengths in production? And probably unsurprisingly, dairy is an economic cluster. We have what we call a location quotient of about 10.3, meaning it is relative advantage.
Right. So one is kind of like average, if I read your report. So 10 is a lot.
Yeah. So one is like average production of all of the U.S. states where if you were to have milk production. And so 10.3 is absolutely huge. It means maybe we're relatively about 10 times more efficient producers in Wisconsin than we are in other states of dairy. So that's unsurprising, right? Wisconsin is the dairy state, and we would expect those things. And so what we say that from that analysis is that there's real opportunity for sort of symbiotic relationships between buyers of those products and the sellers. And so in thinking about agriculture as a more holistic framework from farm to fork, there's opportunity to make that supply chain more efficient and work together and grow.
I think that working together is really important. When I first came into Wisconsin 30 years ago, the dairy industry was not functioning as what we would call a cluster. You kind of had the farmers and the processors kind of ganging up on each other a little bit. Today, they kind of realize they're in the same boat. They have to work together to be more efficient and profitable. They kind of transition from just a group of businesses to an actual viable economic cluster.
That may be particularly true when we think about the concentration, because if we have fewer farms that are producing the same amount of milk, those the processors have to work together with those fewer farms to make sure that production remains viable.
We're talking to Jeff Hatechek and Steve Deller. They are the authors of a big report, the big five-year report on the impact of agriculture in Wisconsin's economy. Steve, we're talking about dairy, understandable, big deal in Wisconsin, but dairy is not the only game in town. What are some of the other key sectors you have your eye on for good or ill in this report?
Well, that's one of the things that's always impressed me about Wisconsin agriculture is that it is extremely diversified. We have we're one of the largest cranberry producers in the U.S. We're one of the biggest snap pea producers, vegetable producers in the U.S. It is extremely diversified. When we do our cluster analysis, the one that always pops out is let me get the name of it here. Fur-bearing animals and rabbit production.
Which people don't think of in Wisconsin.
They don't think of that in Wisconsin, but we dominate that industry. So if you buy a coat and it has a fur lining, like a rabbit collar, odds are that was grown in Wisconsin. Overall, compared to dairy, compared to cranberries, it's pretty small. But our agriculture is extremely diversified.
And, Jeff, you point toward this as an advantage for Wisconsin. If we were all pigs and corn, to pick one of our neighboring states, if the pig economy goes down or the corn economy goes down or there's a blight or whatever, that affects the whole economy. Is that a good sign of resilience, that diversity?
Yeah, it certainly could be a measure of resilience. Like, it's a diversified portfolio when we look at the industry as a whole. And so in recent years and in this year in particular, corn prices are pretty low. Our commodity prices are pretty low. And so I think what that means is that we would have a more buffer relative to some of our neighboring states when it comes to net farm income. And I think that was particularly true historically, too, if we look at sort of the 1980s. Wisconsin was less hurt by the farm crisis in the 80s than some of the other states in the Corn Belt here. Yeah.
It also gives individual farmers opportunities to diversify within themselves. For example, if you're a farmer in the state that's south of us, you're basically corn and beans. There's no other infrastructure to support other crops. In Wisconsin, you could go into hops production if you wanted to, because there's a market for that.
Policy-wise, are there things people can take out of the out of this report and other work the two of you do and say, yeah, we want to support that resilient, diverse farm economy in Wisconsin? Steve, let's go to you on that.
One of the things that's happening is that we're seeing kind of a hollowing out in the distribution of farms. We're seeing growth in the very large farms, which gets a lot of attention. We're also seeing growth in the smaller farms. That's kind of related to local foods. It's related to the diversified agricultural sector. So I think one thing that we could do is look at kind of and celebrate the diversity of our agriculture. And also, I think the other issue that is kind of the elephant in the room is labor shortages. A lot of farmers are adopting these like robotic milking technologies, not because they're fans of Star Wars, but because there's a labor shortage. They don't have a choice. They have to adopt these technologies.
And Jeff, I don't want to dig too far into politics. Immigrants are part of the labor pool that is there. A talk of deporting many of them, cutting back even on legal forms of immigration. Do you see concerns that that labor shortage could be more of a problem in the coming years?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we're still sort of learning in these few weeks of what, the ag economy and what sort of this new, the new Trump administration, both a Republican controlled Senate and House mean for the farm bill, mean for, acts like the Inflation Reduction Act that was a pretty big policy for agriculture in the last few years. So it's sort of the Wild West. I really don't know. I mean, what's going to happen in the next 4 years? I mean, and it depends on if, the programs deliver on the promises of their campaigns. And so, yeah, I think it would certainly be there's certainly things to watch in labor and in trade for the economy. And if those things were to be delivered, I think there were going to be some pretty major adjustments that will have to take place on farm, which may represent increased costs.
Steve, in our last half a minute, this report goes through 2022 just because of how data goes. What do you have your eye on in that time period since the end of that report?
One of the things coming out of COVID is that farm income was actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. Part of that was government payments. But the most recent 2 years, estimates from the USDA has shown that those numbers have come down. So the kind of the good post-COVID years that farmers had, they're actually down and are not doing very well. So I think if we redid these numbers right now with the current farm income, the impacts would be a little bit lower.
We'll leave it there. Steve, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Jeff, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Been talking to Steve Deller and Jeff Hadacek. They are with UW-Madison School of Agriculture and Applied Economics. They're the co-authors of the new 5-year report, Contribution of Agriculture to the Wisconsin Economy.
Coming up on Wisconsin Today, as communities across the state finalize new budgets, we focus on Eau Claire and difficult decisions on how to prioritize funding for services.
We aren't talking about, the fact that we can't provide one program. We're talking about the fact that human lives are at risk.
That conversation is ahead on WPR News. It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Local governments across Wisconsin are looking ahead to 2025 and finalizing their annual budgets.
Last week, Eau Claire County approved a $138 million spending plan. In October, the proposed budget had included cutting support to some nonprofits by half.
After public comments and council debate, the county reinstated most of the funds despite its need to overcome a multi-million dollar deficit.
We're taking a look at how a community in the Chippewa Valley resolved some of its funding issues, and we'll hear the perspective of an Eau Claire nonprofit that's trying to maintain services in a similar financial crunch. First, we have Catherine Schaff, Eau Claire County Administrator. Catherine, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Your county recently approved its 2025 budget, and this decision came after multiple days of discussions and debates. What were some of the sticking points?
A lot of the sticking points in the 2025 budget were around how the board wanted to fund its capital and what capital investments they wanted to make in 2025. It was a difficult budget year from the standpoint of we have budget restrictions when it comes to some of our funding sources, particularly levy and levy limits. And so that reduces our ability to expand programs and sometimes even to continue the program at the same level and with the lack of increase.
And so what were some of those programs that were in that situation where it felt like you couldn't take that next step?
One of the larger areas where we made some real shifts were in the area of human services. We provide our human services programs on behalf of the state of Wisconsin. And what we knew we needed to do with this budget was to increase the amount of funding that we had for out-of-home placements, and that's for both children and adults. And so we increased that amount by $2.6 million. And that necessitated cuts in other program areas. And what we were able to do is actually reduce some of our contracted services and move some of our services around to other programming areas so that we could actually recoup either state or federal funds to pay for those programs.
In the lead up to these discussions, there was the focus on what would happen to local nonprofits and the potential of a 50% cut to their contributions, to their budgets. What happened with that?
Well, the board actually voted to restore that funding because they acknowledged the importance of the partnership that we have with local nonprofits. And we were able to do that by making some changes with how we fund our capital. And we did have a portion of our capital projects that were funded in our operational budget, and we moved those all to either the use of fund balance or use of bonding as a mechanism for paying for those. And so that freed up some of our operational dollars to actually reinstate the amounts that we had previously given to those not-for-profit partners.
Okay, there's some fiscal terminology coming at us here. And I just want to step back for a moment. When you look at the funding for the county, the funding for city, is the funding given, you know, how does that breakdown work, you know, when you look at city and county funding and what is mandated?
Well, it's a little bit different between the city and the county. The county is a dual form of government. We're a local provider of service like the city is, but we are also a provider of service on behalf of the state of Wisconsin. And so if you look at the way that our overall budget is funded, we have around $40 million in property tax levy that funds our services. However, when you look in other areas such as intergovernmental grants and aids, and the intergovernmental charges for services, when you add those two areas together, that's around $70 million of the funding that we have for the services that we provide within the county. And so our funding sources are somewhat different. We also have other local allocations, such as the sales tax, the vehicle registration fee. Sales tax is unique to county government in the state of Wisconsin. So we have around $14.9 million in sales tax that we receive, and we apply that to services. And we have around $2.5 million in vehicle registration fees that we apply to our roadways.
Part of the 2025 county budget includes lowering the tax levy for property owners. Why is that? Why is the county able to lower taxes while maintaining the needed revenue?
The tax levy, the property tax levy, and that's, again, it's around $40 million of the revenue that we apply to our budget. It's around 29% of the overall funding that we receive. That includes money that we use for both operations and to satisfy debt. So anytime that the county issues debt, we have the debt repayment schedule. And as part of that debt repayment schedule, that amount is going down, and that's outside of levy limits. And so that amount goes down, and as that goes down, then the tax burden for that payment actually goes down. And so when we talk about reducing taxes in this year, it is because we took $1.2 million off of that debt repayment, and that brought our mill rate down. The mill rate is the number per thousand that the property taxpayer pays on their property tax bill.
That makes sense. Now, turning to state revenue coming in with shared revenue from state government, Eau Claire County will receive $2.7 million in shared revenue from the state for next year. You know, comparing 2024 to 2025, this is an increase and it's coming in higher than projected. What is the impact of shared revenue?
Shared revenue is a vital revenue source for county government. With some recent change in state law, they actually increased that amount significantly in the 2024 budget cycle. And so, as you had mentioned, it is at $2.7 million. The increase from 2024 to 2025 was around $147,000. And that money is vital for providing the services such as law enforcement and our communications 911 center so that we have emergency services available.
When you look at all the pieces of pie, the biggest chunk here of revenue, as you mentioned, intergovernmental grants and aid, 28% of the budget. What does this category of funds include?
It's primarily in the areas of both highway and human services. So for highway, we have a basic allocation that we receive from the state for maintaining roadways. And we also bill for services because we provide services to the state of Wisconsin in keeping the 94 interstate corridor open on behalf of the state. The other area is in human services, and that's for adult and child protection services. It's for economic support. It's for comprehensive community services, which are wraparound mental health services to ensure the well-being of families and individuals.
So as you transition into the 2025 budget, what will you be monitoring very closely?
We will be looking at all of our revenue sources as well as where we're heading with our expenditures. We know that the budget that we put together is an aggressive budget. We've maxed out our revenue sources. We've done what we can to cut in the areas of expenditures. We have a few areas where there is, by the very nature of the services we provide, quite a bit of risk. And again, that is primarily in the area of human services, where we do not know how many individuals will perhaps need services or placements throughout the year, and those placements can be very costly.
When you use words like an aggressive budget, there is some risk involved. Has Eau Claire County been in this position before?
I would say that with local county government, whether it be Eau Claire County or any other county, I think that all of the counties run with a significant amount of risk because we are the safety net provider of a number of services for individuals in our communities. And what I mean when I say that is that they're mandated services that we are required to provide whether we have funding or not. And that is one of the biggest risk factors that counties bear.
Catherine, thank you for joining us.
You are welcome.
Catherine Schaff is the Eau Claire County Administrator. We're talking about the 2025 budget for Eau Claire County as a lens into the difficult spending decisions that communities are facing, especially when considering how to prioritize services for local residents. Eau Claire had considered a big cut in funding to some nonprofits in order to help balance its new budget. That ultimately didn't go through, but Bolton Refuge House felt the threat. Here to talk about its fiscal situation and its work in the community is Pat Stein, Bolton Refuge House Executive Director. Pat, welcome.
Thank you. I am so excited for this opportunity. I appreciate your time and interest in our work.
Can you explain what does Bolton Refuge House offer the Eau Claire community?
Absolutely. So Bolton Refuge House is a victim service agency. We're a nonprofit here serving the Eau Claire community that also bleeds into Chippewa County because we are the sole victim emergency shelter service provider. The crimes that we assist individuals with are individuals who have experienced or witnessed domestic violence, sexual assault, dating violence, intimate partner abuse, elder abuse, human trafficking, child abuse, and sexual assault. The services that we provide are at no cost. Our services, we have an array of services. They're everything from personal advocacy, which is informing individuals of their rights and remedies, to criminal civil advocacy, which is aiding individuals within the court processes, both within civil hearings as well as criminal hearings. And then a lot of support services, safety planning, systems advocacy, ensuring that other players who are working to enhance victim safety, either by holding offender or abusers accountable, or by doing some other kind of work in a person's kind of that holistic approach that's necessary for an individual to heal.
Pat, you've just described such a wide variety of resources, so many offerings. How would you describe the need that you're seeing for your services?
Yeah, so I've been executive director here in Eau Claire since 2012, but I've been fortunate to work for Bolton Refuge House since 1996. And so that puts a few years on me. With that, the needs are definitely growing. Where some of the trends are is the fact that people are definitely accessing services that are very layered. They may have mental health issues, alcohol and drug abuse, or history of concerns even about maybe maltreatment of their children, and where they are concerned about continuing to be the protective parent. It really is a team approach in order to enhance the safety of victims, survivors, and children.
In order to do this, you need funding. I want to take a closer look at that funding. The original 2025 budget for Eau Claire County, including 50% cuts of funds to local nonprofits like yours, that is not going through, but there still is a cut. What does that mean to you? What does that funding situation look like?
Sadly, this is one of probably three hits that Bolton Refuge House has faced in the last funding year. So it's a snowball effect, and it's devastating. So as somebody might say, well, you know, that's just a few thousand dollars out of your budget. But for us, it's critical. The reason it's so critical is because of the fact that any dollar that we receive from state or federal has to be matched. So if we bring in $100,000 from federal government, they require that we have a $25,000 match. Mm. We were very fortunate, and I don't take lightly what they're having to do in regards to making the budget fit, but those dollars have always met our match for one of our biggest funding streams. So losing those dollars mean that we have to rely on the community to make up the difference in dollars. And that's hard. It's a hard time for everybody to give, as a lot of people are just trying to exist. But if we lose dollars, or when we lose dollars, we have the potential to lose other grant funding because we don't show that we have the community investment any longer in our program. Mm. And that's extremely frightening.
Want to take a look at the federal funding situation as well. Wisconsin's allocation from a federal program is reduced, the Victims of Crime Act fund. What does that reduction, how does that affect Bolton House and what services you're able to offer locally?
Bolton received only 37% of that requested fund. So we went from a 2.5 funded position to one full-time funded position. So where a lot of programs are cutting staff because they lost those dollars, Bolton Refuge House Administration Board of Directors are committed that we aren't going to reduce our programming because of that significant loss. But that is the reality. And if we can't make up those dollars based on community donations, we could be looking at a substantial change in our programming by June 30th of 2025. And out of all the years I've been working with Bolton, we have never faced such a critical conversation to have with the community.
Pat, I wonder if you could leave us with some hope as we end the conversation. Can you share a Bolton Refuge House success story, because you've had so much longevity with this organization?
One of the ones that just pops in my head all the time, and she periodically gives me a call to tell me how she's doing, and how her adult children now are doing, is she says she's embracing her new normal. And I remember when I started work with her is the fact that, I mean, she was daily beaten, raped, children exposed to everything unimaginable that you could imagine, fights through the criminal system, fight through the civil system. And I remember when she was done, she said, I think I'm a new me. And I said, I think you need to embrace the new you. And so she's doing well. Her adult children are thriving, and they survived it. And again, her daily mantra is, this is the new me. And, you know, and that's just one. But there, even if a person chooses not to leave, but because of the work with us, they understand how to enhance their safety. They understand when it's a good time to even remove themselves, even if they have to come back. Those are success stories. So we allow the people to tell us where they feel the success has come in. We just, in order to even preserve our work, try not to be so onerous and recognizing that success is coming from us providing them. It's coming from them utilizing us. We are just a tool in their toolkit. And if we do our right job and we do it the right way, connecting with us, they're going to have many more tools than just Bolton Refuge House when they decide to leave our programming.
Pat, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the invite. I appreciate this opportunity to have a conversation.
And that was Pat Stein, Executive Director of Bolton Refuge House. And earlier, we talked with Eau Claire County Administrator Catherine Schaff.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, meet the owner of a decorated hunting dog fresh off the Grand National Grouse Championship.
So many different dogs, so many good dogs, so many nice handlers. It was very special to have it in Wisconsin.
The talents of cover dog Lake Effect Alley, that's next on WPR News.
It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Wisconsin has a new champion, and her name is Lake Effect Alley.
She is a 6-year-old English setter from Lakeside in the far northwest reaches of our state. And she recently won first place in a competition of 36 dogs from around the country at the Wisconsin Cover Dog Championship.
That championship tests dogs and their ability to find grouse and woodcock. Alley has done so well in competitions this year, she may qualify for a contest of the top 12 dogs nationwide this spring.
Our guest is Lake Effect Alley's owner, Tim Kaufman. Tim, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Alley recently won the state cover dog championship. And for, you know, we're not as familiar with this sport. Can you give us a bit of a tour? Tell us how these competitions work.
Sure. So there's in Wisconsin and Minnesota, we have three different clubs. And the one I'm part of is called the Moose River Grouse Dog Club, which is just south of Superior, Wisconsin, about 25, 30 miles. So amongst those clubs, we run different competitions, and these are also held all over the United States. So there's usually in the spring, there's just local competitions. And then in the fall, when dogs are in better shape and, you know, leaves are on the trees and things like that is when we get into our championship level competitions. So there's always two dogs, we call them braces. There can be up to, you know, some competitions have 20, some have 40. The one I was just in last weekend had 72 dogs in it. So it can be, you know, pretty long. But so there's 1 hour courses that we run, and it's all in natural or state forest land. You know, we're lucky up here, it's called Douglas County forest land, so it's all public land. And on that, we all have horses that are, you know, trimmed or mowed a little bit with ribbon, And those consist of 1 hour long courses. So you'll be braced with another person and their dog. And behind you would be two judges as well. And again, it's all on wild birds. It's all on, you know, how your dog runs. Does your dog stay out front? Does it find any birds? Which in a wild bird trial, sometimes you can have the best bird dog in the world and there might not be a bird on that course. So it's just kind of the luck of the draw sometimes.
What happens if the dogs can't find any birds?
They don't place. So, yeah, but most of the time, really good bird dogs will usually come up with a bird.
You as a handler, what is your role in the competition?
So my main role is to try to keep my dog forward. And we do that once in a while by, we call it singing, but we'll, you know, every dog has a bell on it as well. So you know where the dog is. So I want to keep my dog out front. So if she starts getting to my side, you know, my left or my right, I want to kind of, you know, call her a little bit. And then she should respond to my voice and kind of move back up forward. You always want to keep your dog out in front if possible.
Can you demonstrate a call?
Well, my call would be like, wow, you're going to put me on the spot here. You know, alley up or just call her name. And a lot of people will kind of like bark almost. Like if the dog is going back, it's kind of like a sharp, you know, like, hey, hey. You know, and all of a sudden the dog will be like, oh, okay, got you, buddy. You know, and then they get back to the front.
The communication between you two is just so fascinating. And your body language and you know, how you call to Allie, it seems as if you two really move as a unit.
It has to be as a unit. You know, and I've judged before too, and the judges are looking for that too. Are you two a team? Or sometimes we call it like pulling, like if a handler's really working hard to get a dog around, you know, sometimes the dog has a mind of its own that day as well. And, you know, they just don't want to listen that well. And it's a struggle. And if that happens a lot, a judge can just say, hey, you know, thanks for showing us your dog. And they can pick you up. So it really is a team effort when you're out there.
Can you tell us the story of Allie, Lake Effect Allie, how she got her name and a little bit about her background?
So I've been doing this for about 15 years now. I met a very good friend of mine, Sig Diggetts, and he found out that, you know, I bird hunted a little bit and he had a training spot and he's like, hey, why don't you come over and, you know, train dogs? And I'm like, oh, sure. And I've never heard of really these dog trials or anything like that. So my first dog was Maisie, and she was a four-time runner-up champion. She never won a championship, but she was, you know, second place in four of them, which is outstanding. So it kind of lit my fire to do that. Then I bred Maisie to a dog, and then I got Tilly. And Tilly was an amateur invitational champion in Michigan. And then I bred Tilly, and that's how I got Allie. So I've got a couple generations of dogs at my kennel that we've kind of bred to dogs that we like, and it seems to be working okay.
What is Allie's personality like when you are out hunting? What is she like?
Well, when we're out hunting, it's she really has a one-track mind, and that's to go find a bird. There is really not a whole lot of, you know, she doesn't come to your side. She doesn't want to be petted. She doesn't, you know.
She's in her zone.
You just nailed it. She is in her zone. Now at home, I mean, we could be sitting on the couch and she'll lay down and, you know, she's a normal dog. Not all dogs in the trial world are like that. But, you know, I have my dogs 95% of the time not doing trials. So they need to, I call it, they need to be a good citizen around the house as well. So
I would imagine they need to decompress a little bit because even though they love bird hunting, they need some time away from it as well to just relax a bit, be a dog.
They need to be a dog. You're absolutely right. It can't be all about training and getting them in shape and everything else. I do believe there is overtraining. I suppose you could correlate that with anything else to any other sport, but no, they need to be a dog.
Tim Kaufman is with us, owner of a dog named Lake Effect Alley, recently won the Wisconsin Cover Dog Championship in a field of 35 other dogs as we learn more about this sport. Tim, you and Alley competed in the Grand National Grouse Championship earlier this month, first time ever that this competition was held in Wisconsin. How was that experience for Alley and you?
It was absolutely amazing. I met people from, again, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Kentucky, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan. And, you know, we're all trying for the same thing. We all want to be on top. But at the same time, there's so many different dogs, so many good dogs, so many nice handlers. It was very special to have it in Wisconsin. They've been running this Grand National for 82 years, and it's the first time ever that it's been in Minnesota or Wisconsin. So we were pretty proud of that.
I wonder, in a competition like that, is there an edge at all to knowing the terrain, knowing the environment?
So, yes. Yeah, so we do. It was held down in the Chippewa National Forest, kind of east of Eau Claire. You know, and I do run down there quite a bit. So I do know the courses. People that come from far away, you know, they would walk those courses to kind of get to know the layout of, you know, is there a sharp corner coming up? Is there, you know, a creek crossing? Is there, you know, a road crossing, or just how everything kind of lays out? But you're right. It's kind of a big advantage if you're in your own backyard almost.
How do the dogs respond to one another, you know, especially when there are so many of them doing the same thing and, you know, congregating in the same area?
You know, actually, they do very well. Even, you know, all my years of doing it, there's never been a dog fight. You know, if a dog, you know, does kind of go at another dog or something, that judge can, that judge can pick that dog up and just say, you know, you're done. We're not doing this. Mm-hmm. So your dog does have to be, you know, well-behaved on that end, too.
There's a point in the hunt where your dog has to be just still as ever, rock steady, until the handler gives them that release signal. Can you tell us what that moment is like?
So it's pretty cool. So, you know, you're walking and you're hearing two bells, you know, and we try to get the bells with different tones as well. So when you hear that bell stop, you know, and that can be from, you know, 30 yards away to 180 yards away, you know. And the tricky part of that is now you have to go out and try to find the dog. So it does take a lot of concentration to hopefully know where your dog is at. So, but it does get your heartbeat going pretty good when you know your dog is stopped. So then you go out, you try to find your dog. Once you do find your dog, your judge is with you. And then you go to your judge that, hey, I have a point here. And then he, you know, comes over, he sees your dog. And then you both kind of walk in, you try to get this bird. Hopefully there's a bird there. You try to get this bird to flush. So when that bird flushes, we all carry it's a blank pistol, just a blank gun. We don't shoot these birds. Mm-hmm. So it's all blank guns. And that bird flies, shoot your gun. That dog has to remain steady, can't move its feet, you know, until you are able to walk over to that dog. Then you grab the dog by the collar and you go back to the trail. But yeah, that it, you know, it can be a long time. You know, there's been dogs that, you know, they can be on point for, you know, 2 to 5 minutes without moving.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, it takes quite a bit of patience on their side too.
I wonder, is that something the dog is trained to do, or are they just born being able to do that?
Well, I'll say it's both. Most of the dogs that are, especially at this Grand National event, you know, there's good breeding out there. So we always try to breed to dogs that have that characteristic. I'm not saying it always happens, but, you know, we're always trying to better that breed. But a lot of times too, like in the spring, we do a ton of training on standing. You know, we put them on a barrel so they can't move off the barrel. And we throw homing pigeons, you know, so we'll put pigeons in front of their face, kind of try to trick them, try to get them to screw up. So they're used to birds flying in front of them, but it's not always that easy to get them to stay.
Does Allie have her training and competition ups and downs like human athletes, or does she stay pretty consistent?
She's been pretty consistent this fall, but absolutely. Some days are better than others. But yeah, yeah. I mean, some days a basketball player doesn't make all of his shots.
That's you know? True.
right. You know, and sometimes the birds don't cooperate, you know, sometimes you get a course that, you know, maybe doesn't have very many birds on there, but yeah, and I watched it this weekend. I mean, there's phenomenal dogs that, you know, had a little hiccup, you know, but it kind of makes it fun too.
Tim, is Allie as an English setter in her peak years of this sport, or does she have more to go? What does the future hold?
Yeah, usually, you know, over the years, you kind of look, you know, from 4 to about 8 is really where their prime is. As far as competition wise.
So she's right in her prime.
She is right in her prime, yes.
And I also understand that she might be able to go to a bigger competition in the future with more dogs from a national level. What might happen in the spring?
So there's another event. It'll be held out in New York this year. It's called the Invitational. So it's the top 14 dogs in the country that get invited there. But we don't know that yet.
Okay. But we're pulling for her.
Yes. Yeah. It'll be very close. But I mean, if she makes it, it would be amazing. For me, it'd be yeah, just a dream. So.
Oh, that would be absolutely amazing. How do you know when it's time for a bird dog to retire, and what does their retirement look like?
Well, my dog's retirement looks like everything else. They just stay the same. We go hunting together. They're part of our family. You know, so nothing. The only thing I don't do as much is you know, go to the big competitions. I still might run them in the spring. You know, we call it spring trials, you know, kind of to have fun, you know. Yeah, really retirement for them is just normal, you know. We still walk in the woods, we walk behind the house and everything else, so.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us. All the best to you and Allie.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Do give her an extra treat.
That'll do.
Tim Kaufman is an avid participant in bird dog competitions, owner of Lake Effect Alley, a very successful bird dog in Lakeside in northwest Wisconsin.
Lake Effect Alley isn't the only competitive dog in Wisconsin.
We invited you to share pet stories and pictures. A listener named Shelley answered the call.
Shelley writes, I've been involved in dog sports with my Portuguese water dogs for 28 years. I compete in water trials, conformation, obedience, rally, agility, scent work, and in the past, barn hunt. And we've talked about barn hunt competitions here on the show.
Shelley says they are willing workers, and the more you train, the more they want to work.
And the email goes on, recently I cared for my friend's 5 added to my 4. It was a house full, and they're all related.
Wow. And yes, Shelley sent pictures documenting that. Check out the Portuguese Water Dogs on Facebook at the WPR Music Arts and Culture page and share your own pet pictures while you're there. Wisconsin Today is the work of a team of producers, hosts, and technical directors. Learn more about us at wpr.org/Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to WPR News.